Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this 30-point blowout edition of a Gopher Gridiron Radio, where we're going to talk about this 41-10 win, essentially out of nowhere, where Minnesota's defense goes from the stone worst to one of the best defensive performances, arguably the best defensive performance we've seen in the PJ Fleck era. But before we introduce our special guest, Luke, do you want to give folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, so the Goal Line Club, again, is sponsoring the 2018 season. All these podcasts that you listen to are brought to you by the fine folks at the Goal Line Club. If you're interested in checking out the many things that they offer in terms of game day previews, tailgate events, tunnel team, I encourage you to head over to goalineclub.org for more information.
So, Derek, introducing what a terrible lead in there for my second cousin, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, first of all, how are you this evening?
I'm doing really well. Appreciate you having me back. And if your listeners enjoy schemes, there's a lot to unpack in this episode.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun getting in depth in some X's and O's. But the funny part about it, from the last time we talked with the three of us, was Luke got the outro through for last week's venting edition of Rob Smith Needs to Be Fired Weekly. And I looked down at my phone and I said, boys, Rob Smith just got fired. So here we are a week removed from it. Joe Rossi is now inserted as the Gopher defensive coordinator, goes out and schemes arguably the best defensive performance of his career, which not only did he have a fantastic scheme in place and game plan in place, he got this defense that had been absolutely reeling to execute it. So, Luke, we got some good stuff to get into tonight. It's not very often we get to talk about a 30-point blowout win at home for your Golden Gopher squad.
Yeah, so before, Derek, we get into some of this, I just want to read off some stats that kind of stick out to me that are just actually kind of mind-boggling, if I'm being honest. Purdue was 0-for-12 on third downs. The Gophers were what, Ryan? Arguably the worst third down
Minnesota
defense.
Coming into this game in Big Ten play, Luke, had been giving up 49.4% of their third down conversions.
Yeah.
Purdue had been converting, I believe, at a top five rate in the Big Ten. And as Luke alluded to, they go 0-for-12 on third down on Saturday.
I mean, that alone is probably the most staggering statistic of this game. Again, a defensive touchdown has to be a highlight as well. But I think most importantly, the 10 points. You can say the Gophers were finally carried by their defense. And as we said, you weren't going to be able to outscore teams 55-56 and expect to win games. So, Derek, tell us what kind of scheme changes did the Gophers make in this Purdue game that led to this absolute drumming of the Purdue Boilermakers?
Well, there were a lot. I was surprised, actually. I know that the mantra from the coaches had been, you know, wanting to simplify things, and that was something we talked about a week ago on the podcast, that a suggestion is just, you know, simplify and it's going to speed up the game. And I think in run defense, I think that the Gophers, the coaches did that. They played almost exclusively zone pass defense out of the second level, out of the linebacker level, which versus the run, they were able to read and react a lot faster. They weren't having to identify man-to-man coverage. They weren't getting run out of the box by players going out on pass routes, backfield motion, jet motion, things like that. So I think in the run game, they did simplify things quite a bit, and I think that helped a lot. In the pass game, it was almost their number of changes, you know, talking with Ryan before before recording, the number of changes were just incredible. So I guess I could start with, I think one of the key differences in this game that we hadn't seen previously was the ability for the Gophers defense to disguise a coverage or hide a scheme pre-snap. So with a team like Purdue, the coaching staff must have felt that this was a team that can hurt you by identifying route combinations and things pre-snap. So they look at the defense, the way the defense is lined up, they look to the sideline, and the coaches call a route combination in the passing game based on what they think the defense is going to run in pass defense. What the Gophers did this game that they hadn't showed before is lined up in one type of coverage or one look, and then, you know, prior to the snap or shortly after the snap, you know, bounced into a separate coverage. So, for example, lined up in a cover two look, made it look like they were playing off coverage, and then rolled up a safety or rolled up somebody else and played cover one man coverage post-snap. And I think that really confused Purdue. It kept them off balance in a lot of their play calls. So, you know, they're calling zone-busting plays, and the Gophers roll up in man coverage. They're calling man-busting plays. The Gophers drop back three defenders into zone. So I thought that really kept them off balance, and I thought that was one of the real big key changes for this game.
Isn't it a novel concept how Joe Rossi in 5 days was able to implement a game plan that made sense and didn't immediately tell the opposing offense what they were going to be running? It's a hell of a concept, ain't it? I mean, that's why Rob Smith's no longer here. I mean, is there a person who, you know, at home watching that game, I almost kind of feel for Rob Smith to a degree where it's like your defense – flips a 180 in the matter of 5 days with just a change of voice in the linebacker room as the defensive coordinator, and your defense that you had just, you know, been commanding signals for that had just given up 55 points, 650 yards and 430 rushing yards to an Illinois team that I still think is not very good. They're a good rushing team. But this Purdue team, top three in most total yardage statistics during Big Ten play, points during Big Ten play. And Minnesota, through three quarters before garbage time, goes from allowing 430 rushing yards to negative two. They go from allowing 55 points to Illinois to 3 points through three quarters before garbage time, less than 150 total yards to a Purdue team that had been on an absolute tear. And to speak to Derek's point, you look at some of the easy changes that Minnesota made. I think that zone coverage from the linebackers made a ton of sense, because what had we seen Minnesota's linebackers struggle with? We'd seen them struggle with man coverage. And when you have a one-man wrecking crew in Rondale Moore, I fully believe that Jeff Brohm and his offensive staff thought that they were going to see a lot more of that. They were going to get matchups that they would have thought were advantageous against guys like Kamal Martin, Thomas Barber. I did notice just one or two times where Minnesota actually had a matchup like that, but they weren't burned by it. They kept everything in front of them. And I think when you want to give Joe Rossi some credit, is what I think he did, and Derek, I'd be curious to hear if you think I'm right, is from what I saw when I was watching it live, and then I watched it back this morning for my GIF rewinds that are all over Gopher Illustrated. They're free for all of you to read. If you're not going, or if you're going to read a single GIF rewind this year, this would probably be the one, considering it's a 30-point Big Ten home victory that Minnesota had success in offensive defense. But what Joe Rossi did was he took a lot off the plate of his linebackers, and he put it onto the secondary, in my opinion, where, from what I had been told, these Gopher linebackers had just been overloaded with information, where for some of these guys, like a guy like Blake Cashman, for example, for Blake Cashman, it needs to be either A or B. There cannot be a C, D, or E. With Blake Cashman, you have to say, if this happens, you do this. If this happens, you do that. Keep it as simple as possible. And when you do that with someone like Blake, He's going to play fast. He's going to be dynamic, and he's going to be someone that can create turnovers for you. Like, same thing with a guy like Kamal Martin. Kamal, you have this responsibility or this responsibility. Not if this checks in motions, well, then you need to call out this, and then you're responsible for this. Joe Rossi made it very simple. Very, very, very simple. It was either man or just very easy zone for these linebackers, and that's why you saw Blake Cashman go from what P.J. Fleck said after the game, his worst game of his career, to arguably one of his best. And what happened, all it was a change in voice in that linebacker room, and it was a change in scheming. I mean, you look at Minnesota, the amount of – I think I want to preach to the heavens here how refreshing it was to not watch – right off the snap, as Derek alluded to, you're not giving away what you're doing. And Minnesota wasn't playing 10 yards off and 12 yards off with their corners and their safeties. They were mixing in press man, or they were just 4 yards off. They weren't allowing Purdue to be able to get out and get into space. And for a guy like Chris Williamson, I think Chris Williamson played the best game of his Gopher career coming off what I thought against Illinois was one of the best games of his career. Now, Derek, you brought it up in the pre-production meeting, and I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, there's a lot of attention being paid to Blake Cashman, Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin, all rightfully so, I think. I think they both, all three of those linebackers played well. But you look at a guy like Chris Williamson, he saw a lot of man-to-man coverage with Rondale Moore, and he made a lot of key plays when it mattered.
Yeah, I mean, I considered him the kind of the silent MVP of the game. He was a guy that, the Gophers substituted, when they brought in Rondale Moore on a package, they substituted in Chris Williamson. When they lined up Rondale Moore in the slot, they would shift things around. Even if Williamson was supposed to line up outside, he would shift inside and line up over Rondale Moore. So if you had a chance to see a Purdue game prior to Saturday, that's his game. He catches short passes, and then he goes video game and goes crazy with his speed at post catch. And I don't know if there was even one or two times on Saturday that he caught the ball with room to run. So Chris Williamson, again, as a defensive back, sometimes the less you hear their name called, the better game they're having. And he had an incredible game on Saturday.
I also want to talk about the stunts that we saw Minnesota run up front, because I don't know if you heard, Minnesota didn't have just one, didn't have just two, but three sacks on the day. And none of them were from Carter Coughlin. Like, here we are. Like, I'm sitting up there watching Kamal Martin come around different stunts. I'm sitting here watching Thomas Barber come around. Boye Mafe did some things. And you look at a guy like Carter Coughlin, leads the Big Ten in sacks, or at least he did coming into this week. And you look at some of the ways that Minnesota used him as a weapon, yet he didn't have a sack. What I mean by that is Purdue's offensive line paid so much attention to Carter, where Carter would, you know, fake like he's going outside and dart inside, taking the tackle and the guard with him. Well, then what happens? Minnesota either brings their three technique around, they bring Kamal Martin around. That's how Kamal Martin's able to get home and generate, I think he had three or four pressures on the day, was there was so much attention being paid to Carter Coughlin. Joe Rossi knew that. He'd been the defensive line coach for the entire season. He was well aware of what, if he was the opposing offensive coordinator, what he would do. And so you saw him be creative with stunts. And for him to be able to do that, I mean, we even saw some Mike Zimmer double A gap pressures. I mean, we saw Minnesota line up some guys, and then only, so they'd show six at the line of scrimmage on these passing downs, rush four, but you didn't know what four it was going to be. I mean, these are just simple freaking concepts that it couldn't get across to Rob Smith that maybe this is how you should do it. And Joe Rossi was able to do it in a couple of just 4 or 5 days, being able to work 2 days, implement a game plan. And again, getting these guys to come out and execute as well as they did for as little of success that they've had in recent weeks, because you look at what Minnesota's done defensively the last 3 weeks. They get their bell rung by Nebraska. They give up 22 fourth quarter points, blow a 22-point fourth quarter lead, end up giving up 31 points at home to Indiana. They go on the road last week to Illinois, give up 600-plus yards, 55 points. And here we are talking about a team that just held Purdue to 10 points, less than 230 yards. And, Derek, you want to talk about chunk plays. I mean, we've harped every single week about the amount of chunk plays, and rightfully so. 31 touchdowns that Minnesota had given up coming into this game. Well, they were average of 34 yards. When you look at the chunk plays that Purdue had, they didn't have any. It didn't have any. Their longest play of the day was 17 yards. 17. They only had four plays over 14 yards on the day. Again, I don't want to turn this into let's give Joe Rossi the TCF Bank Stadium, the new coach's office, and everything. But the way he was able to just do some simple implementation of things. And before I finally kick it to you, Derek, I mean, I did also notice that you look at Minnesota's defensive line and their D end. It certainly looked like to me the change that Minnesota made there was they went back to a wide nine. And they wanted to make sure that defensive end knew you're the one that's going to set the edge. You're the one that's responsible for, you know, these different things. But you look at the way that, once again, Derek, and just these simple implementations of just different stunts on the defensive line, changing into a wide nine on the defensive line, and simplifying things for essentially all three levels of the defense. It's quite remarkable how Minnesota continues to do that, or they did that last week, and it paid off with great results.
Yeah, I mean, just to add a couple more things, you mentioned the wide nines. That does things like takes away jet sweep, takes away some of the outside running plays, some of the outside passing plays, because you automatically set the edge even pre-snap. And, you know, the other thing I would add is we talked a lot about how things work in tandem. And you look at the way that the Minnesota was able to generate a pass rush. Well, that's because in third down situations, third down passing situations, Minnesota ran more press coverage. So when you run press coverage, you take away the short, quick passes. The quarterback has to hang on to the ball longer. That gives a longer time for the twists and the stunts that you mentioned to develop. They were able to do that. They were able to get pressure. So you're asking the offense, you're saying, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us on difficult throws, corner routes down the field, fade routes down the field that take time to develop. We're going to take away everything over the middle with zone pass coverage from the linebackers, and we're going to take away the quick routes of press coverage on the outside. So they provided a nice game plan, especially considering the weather, where it might have been a little bit more difficult to throw downfield, and they really made the offense take the path of most resistance, you know, in order to be successful.
Yeah, two things before I kick it over to Luke is I'm hearing a lot about the weather from people on Gopher Twitter saying, well, yeah, the weather clearly affected Purdue. You shouldn't put much stock into this Gopher defense. Y'all know that Minnesota also had to play in this weather. Minnesota's offense did anyway. They put up 41 points. So Purdue scored 10. They had 3 points going into garbage time. Don't tell me about the weather being an excuse for this Purdue offense, because Minnesota's offense, they didn't have a lot of issues with that. And then, Luke, I don't know if you mentioned or you noticed this, but Minnesota also used a corner blitz. Hell, they used a safety blitz. I mean, just different things that they hadn't shown all year, simple things that, and if you bring a corner off the edge, you got to make sure you have somebody cover where he's going to. If you bring a safety, well, then you've got to make sure he gets home. You look at where Thomas Barber gets his sack, that's on the safety blitz. It's where Jacob Huff disguises it right up until pre-snap, starts running towards the line of scrimmage. He actually takes on the running back. Thomas Barber is in man coverage with the running back. He sees Jacob Huff pick up the running back there in terms of run into him. Well, then he's like, all right, well, no one's on me. Gets home to David Blau, and he's able to get a sack in the play. Just these simple things. He's not reinventing the wheel, Luke. But what were your thoughts on this Gopher defense?
Well, I think the thing that I find most interesting, you already alluded to it, was their ability to actually hold Purdue from explosive plays. You look at, like, David Blau's line. He was 20 for 31, but That's really not all that unusual for him. He usually has a few more passing attempts, but like that percentage, you know, right around, you know, the upper 60%. That's usually where he's at. But it was only for 142 yards and one touchdown. Now his turnover that resulted in a defensive score on the fumble, the strip fumble, and the return by Cashman, that was a big play. But I think the thing that we've harped on all year is you have to eliminate the big plays, and it's always a lot easier said than done. But, you know, when shown, the Gopher defense really maybe isn't as bad as we thought they were if they could eliminate the big plays, and they did that. And, you know, I think you're able to see that they were able to make the most of that opportunity by eliminating those big plays.
I mean, you look at the Blake Cashman play, for example. I mean, Blake Cashman makes a couple of big plays. He's able to, and again, you want to talk about the impact Carter Coughlin had that didn't show up in the stat sheet. Look at that fourth down stop that Blake Cashman had. Well, what happens? Carter Coughlin cuts inside of the tackle, forcing internal pressure there. And so what Purdue does on the plays, it's a design quarterback run. They're pulling their, I believe it was the right guard and the tight end on that side. Well, the right guard is supposed to be coming around the tackle there. Well, he sees Carter, and he has to take him there, which puts a step slow in that tight end has to adjust. And that's the seam that Blake Cashman comes through, and he's able to get the tackle for loss there and hold Purdue to a turnover on downs. And why was Blake Cashman able to do that? Great instincts. Carter Coughlin's the one on the inside there. He has to, you know, he darts inside of the tackle there. It slows down the pulling guard. The tight end can't get around him quick enough. And David Blau's already outside of that, and Blake's able to come through for that tackle. I mean, Blake Cashman, we continue to see it where if this kid just knows what he's doing and he's playing fast and it's very simple, all he does is make plays. I mean, his strip sack, or excuse me, not strip sack, his strip fumble there, Derek. I mean, you saw some pretty good technique there to where he stops him. He gets in front of him, gets to the other side, gets the ball side, rips the ball out, scoops and scores. I mean, that's about as pretty as you can ask for.
Yeah, it was. We've talked about earlier in the year that some of the difficulty the defense had been having, and we were sitting on the podcast saying it doesn't look like this defense has seen some of these plays the offense is running. And what was interesting about those short yardage plays on Saturday, it was the exact opposite. And in fact, I think it was the post game where Cashman, they asked him to break down that play, and he said, "Well, I knew, you know, given the formation and the first post snap read," he said, "I knew what play they were running because we had repped it in practice." So he was able to react quicker to the play, and you know, his closing speed is his number one asset. And so when he is able to react, that he likes to go backdoor on short yardage. That's not always advisable in the wide open field, you know, first and 10 distances, but on short yardage where you have to get home and try and force a stop, he's able to do that. He's able to close, and he gets in and sees that the quarterback's carrying the ball out and, you know, goes for the strip on the one short yardage play and makes a fantastic play. So it was interesting to see that just on those running plays, especially in short yardage, it looked like the opposite of what we've been saying. It looked like they had seen those things. They had repped them in practice, and they were able to react quicker.
Now, I want to get your thoughts on this. I do think that was probably the most impressive Gopher defensive performance in the PJ Fleck era. That being said, I'm not ready to anoint Joe Rossi after one game, you know, the D coordinator of the future. Now, did he make a hell of a first impression? And is that something that PJ Fleck's going to remember? Absolutely. But in that same breath, I think Northwestern coming in here this weekend is going to look at the changes that Joe Rossi made, and they're going to have a game plan ready for what Minnesota showed on Saturday. It was clear that Purdue was not ready for this. They didn't make any adjustments, which, say what you will about that Purdue offense, the way they've been humming, the fact that they couldn't get anything going defensive or offensively, drive after drive after drive, until the fourth quarter where they just decided we're down 41-3, we're going to run the ball. You know, just essentially waving the right white flag. I think Joe Rossi has made a great first impression. I still think that Minnesota is going to look at other options, and PJ Fleck's going to explore those in December after the season and then in January at the coaches' convention. But am I wrong to just say that I'm not ready to anoint Joe Rossi after one game, arguably, in my opinion, the most impressive defensive performance in the PJ Fleck era? Like, I'm all for Joe Rossi if he does this again against Northwestern. He does this again against Wisconsin. Now, it is going to be interesting because Northwestern and Wisconsin are two different type of offenses that Minnesota has not seen a lot of this year. You look at the different teams that Minnesota's played of late, look at Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska, Indiana. And Minnesota really hasn't played a style of team offensively like Northwestern is going to show on Saturday since Iowa. And that didn't really go well for some different reasons. But what are your guys' take on Joe Rossi here in the long term?
Well, I think for me, I agree with you that he's going to be evaluated over a series of games. There are two more games coming, and so he's going to be evaluated based on that body of work. And to your point, both offensive and defensive coaching staffs look for tendencies. When they look at game film and they develop a game plan for opponents, they look at tendencies and they develop a game plan to counter or combat that. And so there was a little bit of an advantage on Saturday with some of the things that Coach Rossi ran. They hadn't showed a lot of that. And so Purdue hadn't necessarily developed a game plan to attack what they showed on Saturday. So, you know, if you prefer your baseball analogy, it's, you know, they didn't have him scouted. They hadn't seen the number of pitches that he threw and develop a plan of attack, so to speak. So believe me, I would love it if the game plan and the game calling is as good as it was against Purdue, where we don't even need to have this conversation. I don't think that's realistic. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but realistically, this is a Power Five conference. Coaching staffs across the Big Ten have very, very good coaches. They're going to scout this. They're going to develop, look at tendencies and develop a game plan. And then it's the chess match. What does Coach Rossi do to counter what the offense prepares for them? So you're right. It's one game. I don't think you could call it any better after one game. It's hard to imagine a better debut, but he's going to be evaluated over the next couple of games.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I think, Ryan, you and I talked about, you know, especially even after the first three games of the non-conference season, you know, most people had anointed this defense fixed, right? And we both were like, I'm not gonna basically buy in until I've seen this with some consistency in the Big Ten. And the next thing we knew, you know, we were sitting here last week and Rob Smith was fired. So we kind of know where that went. I'm not trying to say that, you know, Joe Rossi, this is a one-hit wonder. But that said, I was encouraged by some of the changes he's made. His willingness and lack of maybe stubbornness to adapt and try and adapt so that he can make improvements for this defense, that's definitely encouraging. But I think long term, I'm going to agree with your take from last week or from the preview episode. I think they go national with this. Defensive coordinator spot, I think almost even regardless of how this season ends out. I think that this is still going to be the most pivotal hire in the Fleck era. It's probably going to make or break his time here at the University of Minnesota. So I don't think Rossi had a good game. I just don't believe that it's probably the right move for them.
All right, before we get to the offensive side of the ball, which continues to hum right along with eight underclassmen starting, Luke, do you want to give him a word from the Goal Line Club?
Yeah, so for those people that were at the game on Saturday, many of you maybe participated in the tailgate. This is going to be your last opportunity to participate in a tailgate with this upcoming Northwestern game. It's a great opportunity to connect with a lot of different Gopher fans. I do know that there is limited space available inside. And so I would encourage you to get there early if you're interested. For those that want to participate in that tailgate, it's $35 for non-member or for members, $45 for non-members. You have to sign up by November 14th at 1 p.m. That's when registration will close. Additionally, there will be a game day preview event. This takes place at the Delta Hotel by Marriott in Northeast Minneapolis. There is parking there. It's right off Industrial Boulevard. You got to sign up for that event by 1 p.m. on Tuesday, November 13th. $25 for non-members, or gosh, I cannot say that right for the life of me. $25 for members, $35 for non-members. Again, I encourage many of you to take advantage of these opportunities. And lastly, I'll just say the Tunnel Team, this is your last opportunity to take part in the Tunnel Team. It's $10. It's a unique opportunity to participate and be a part of, you know, the introduction of the team going onto the field. This is something, you know, it's incredibly reasonably priced and a great opportunity for people with kids. So I think that more than likely the weather will be better. It'll be an opportunity for the Gophers to become bowl eligible. So if you want to participate in any of those events, head to goallineclub.org.
And I'll just say that I know that the Goal Line Club people coming into this game this weekend were a little happy that you guys drank them dry for that Indiana game on Friday night. Now, the other thing about this tailgate coming up here this weekend, it's 11 a.m. kickoff. So if you don't want to get up at, you know, with me and be up at 4:30 to get out to the tailgate lot for you and me to the tree stand, I believe that the tailgate's going to open at 8 a.m. for this Northwestern game. So you can get up at a semi-reasonable time. You don't have to go out into the cold because the projected high temperature for Saturday's game, 28 degrees. You don't want to sit outside. The Goal Line Club is inside Williams Arena. Like, the tailgate's inside, open bar, meal ticket. And you can have some mimosas. You can have a screwdriver, one, two, three, or four. you can have a good time. So like Luke said, hopefully coming up here, we have some more information for you guys about the signing day social coming up here. And the crazy part about it is we're like 5 weeks away from National Signing Day, and it's going to get very, very hectic on Gopher Illustrated here in the very new future, including the four-star defensive lineman, the former Bama commit that was on campus here that paid his own way to be here. So, again, if you want more information about the tailgate, the tunnel team coming up here, go to goalineclub.org. But, Luke, I mean, this is a Gopher offense, 41 points.
Yeah.
We're talking about an offensive line that, Derek, I think I want to give you the floor first, that I paid my homage to them. They continue to play, I think, outstanding. The two sacks in the day, to me, came on coverage sacks where Tanner Morgan should have thrown it away. Running backs average over 8.5 yards a carry. With Donnell Green back and healthy, this Gopher offensive line just continues to block so, so well.
Yeah, I thought it was Donnell Green's best game. I thought it was as a unit, I thought it was their best game in terms of just effort. You know, playing through the whistle, getting extra push downfield. I think that was their best game all year. And I think maybe I haven't mentioned earlier, you know, remiss, haven't mentioned earlier in the year how well the tight end and H-back position, how well those guys, Colton Beebe and Cole Keith and those guys on the outside have been blocking well all year, but in particular on Saturday, again, really good push. You know, Mo Ibrahim's best run of the day. You get a double team from Donnell Green and the tight end. They drive the guy 6 yards downfield. Colton Beebe gets a pancake block on the outside, and he's, you know, the running back's untouched to the safety. He makes a move and able to beat the first secondary player, and he's down the field 40 yards. So really good game from the offensive line, good push, good effort from those guys. Again, just in terms of a, you know, being physical, being a little bit nasty, it was nice to see those guys. And then last, I would say, you know, to continue kind of the theme of the tandems, you know, you mentioned, Luke, about explosive plays being limited. Well, in the second half, Minnesota is able to run the ball well, which keeps the ball away from Purdue. You know, Purdue, you can think of any offense that's predisposed to explosive plays, especially a spread offense. Sometimes it's just a matter of possessions. You know, it's like a home run hitter in baseball. He's just looking at at bats. He needs enough at bats to get a home run. And so the offense being able to control the line of scrimmage and run the ball was key to not allowing Purdue to mount any sort of comeback in the second half.
And you look at, you know, this game, frankly, you can go back and watch the GIF rewinds. That third quarter alone with some offensive line and tight end porn. Like, the way that Colton Beebe and Cole Keith, Colton Beebe especially, I mean, this man is annihilating whatever guy is across the line of scrimmage from him. You know, Minnesota's only using him in select situations to try and maintain his health. And that plan has surely been working. He's been as devastating as a run blocker at the tight end position that we've seen all year. I don't want to say in many years, because I think Nate Wozniak was a very, very good run blocker, but you're seeing guys like Mo Ibrahim and Bryce Williams benefit from it. The three long runs that Mo Ibrahim has in the third quarter, he's untouched to the second level in all of them. Minnesota's either working double teams, or you're seeing Cole Keith and Colton Beebe hold off an edge that just allows Mo Ibrahim to get skinny, get vertical, and get to the second level. I mean, this is something to where we've been clamoring for great offensive line play for years, Luke, since we've started this podcast. We've talked about it at length with Derek Burns here about how we want to have Minnesota end that drive. I think Donnell Green deserves some credit here, because I think this Minnesota offensive line, yes, they played to the whistle, Derek, but they were disciplined. Connor Olson drew, I think, two different unsportsmanlike conduct penalties where he didn't retaliate when Purdue got undisciplined. Donnell Green, he was finishing to the whistle. He got an unsportsmanlike conduct. His defender did against him. And this is a Minnesota offensive line that did not retaliate. I'm proud of Donnell Green for not retaliating once here, but I still firmly believe if you're not watching Donnell Green play right now, I mean, this guy's playing at a very high level. He's someone along with, I mean, you can look at multiple members along this Minnesota moving company up front in the run blocking game between Falele, Andries, Weiler. Weiler, who maybe is the unsung hero of this unit because he's finally healthy. This is the first time that we're getting into the final few games of the season here. We're not worried about Jared Weiler's injury history. It's been Jared Weiler's been on the field. He's been extremely productive for Minnesota. Connor Olsen, has been playing a lot better brand of football here in the last month. He's gaining confidence. And then Donnell Green looks like he's going to be an NFL draft pick coming up here in the spring. But it's Brian Callahan and it's Clay Patterson. I mean, it's Brian Callahan being able to develop these guys, have a single voice, and he's doing it with a true freshman at right tackle, a redshirt freshman at right guard, a redshirt sophomore at left guard. And this offensive line is just not allowing a lot for this Purdue team to really go against. And it was just extremely refreshing to see, Luke.
Yeah, kudos to that offensive line. They rushed for 265 yards on the day, 6.5 yards per carry. And could have, really potentially could have been more had, I'll probably get flack for this if Ibrahim had a second gear. I'll say this. The offense, putting up, let's see, they didn't put up all 41 points. What was it, Sans 7?
They put up 34 points.
34
they put
points.
Up,
it was good. I'll
put
say,
up 450 total yards.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. I'll say this, though. I think that they left plays out there. Obviously, people will remember the Demetrius.
The receivers decided to catch today.
Yeah.
Decided to catch on Saturday at some point.
Right. I mean, Demetrius Douglas had one, he basically started running before he caught it. Chris Ottman-Bell had another missed opportunity. Morgan missed Tyler Johnson in the flat, which would have almost assuredly been a touchdown in and of its own right. But, they missed some opportunities. And as Fleck has noted, this is a young group. We kind of expect that in some respects, but then they also responded, right? Ottman-Bell had a really nice grab. Tyler Johnson had a really nice grab in tough situations where maybe you wouldn't think they'd get them. So I still think that I'm very bullish on this offense going forward. I think everyone should be. And I know, Ryan, you're about as high as anyone on this offense that I've met.
No, really?
Yeah, just
really?
A little bit. But I think what we do have to we do have to make sure we touch on, how good has Kirk Ciarrocca been, Derek?
Well, it's been really fun to see we've talked a lot about the layers that he's able to add. So, as an offensive coordinator, you develop something that you do well or things that you do well on offense, and the defenses naturally game plan and react to that. And then it's up to you to develop the next level. How do you counter that? And he is, give me an example on Saturday, for the second week in a row, defenses now have schemed to take away the RPO slant. They're playing shaded inside. The safeties are playing up a little bit to try and take away the slant. So Kirk Ciarrocca saw that in the Illinois game. They reacted to it in the Illinois game, but now you come in with a week's preparation, and he's got four or five things now to counter that defense. He's got an inside, a slant, and slanting out, a double move. He's got tunnel screen. He came back with bubble screen. He's got four or five plays on the outside. If Purdue ever went with single high safety, they isolated man coverage. They threw back shoulder fades on the outside. So it's really been fun to see him develop his chess match and his schemes to counter what these defenses are trying to do to stop him. And the last thing I would add is, the Gophers offensive line playing better. They're finally now able to, they're doing better against plus one boxes. In the past, we've talked about, if they have an even box, they do pretty well. But the minute the defense goes plus one, that's where things kind of break down. And you can't put that all on the offensive line because you have an extra defender in there. But on Saturday, and look, I know Purdue's not the 85 Bears, but they were able to run against plus one boxes. And believe me, Kirk Ciarrocca, if they can develop that and do that against more teams, if you thought those wide receivers on the outside were good before, just wait until they're able to run against plus one boxes and the defenses have to react to that, because you're going to see more single coverage on the outside. You're going to see more explosive plays.
And I think the big thing that, as Eric talked about, Luke mentioned it, it's the counters. And not necessarily the counter play of run, but the counters that Minnesota is trying to get away from tendency-wise. Opposing defenses know that Minnesota loves to go to the slant and the post from the slot, or they just love to run the slant and the post in general. So how does Minnesota counter that? Well, you see that on that third and goal situation where Tyler Johnson fakes like he's going to run a slant, stops on the brakes, runs immediately towards the sidelines. Tanner Morgan delivers an accurate pass there. Tyler Johnson walks in for the score. Minnesota has to settle for a field goal there. Or in the Demetrius Douglas drop. Was it a terrible drop? Absolutely. But you look at it, what was that the counter to? Minnesota loves to run tunnel screens. It's where the outside receiver comes in underneath. The slot receiver goes out to block. So what happens on that play? Demetrius Douglas blocks one, Mississippi two, fakes like he's doing it. Tyler Johnson fakes like he's coming in underneath. Both the slot corner and the outside corner bite on it. Demetrius Douglas bursts vertical. He's wide open by 10 yards, just drops it. Still a great play design. Or you look at the pop pass to Jake Paulson for his first career score. What does Minnesota love to do with Seth Green in the game at Wildcat? They love to go with inside zone, a little bit of read option. So what does Minnesota do? Well, Seth Green fakes like he's just going to keep the ball. He takes one step, stops. What happens for Jake Paulson? Jake Paulson just acts like he's coming down the line of scrimmage. All of the linebackers suck up. One Mississippi two gets vertical, wide open, touchdown. These are all simple things to where an offensive coordinator at a Big Ten level has to know these things. He has to know what are our tendencies offensively and how do we counter those. And it's very refreshing to see on just those three examples alone, even though the execution was only executed or the play call was only executed in one of those, all three of those plays could have and potentially should have gone for touchdowns. And to Luke's point, Minnesota potentially left some points on the field there. But, you know, Luke, you also touched on Mohamed Ibrahim. And I know that Derek mentioned it in the pre-production meeting. I've been thinking it as well. Is Mo Ibrahim getting better? Absolutely. And, I wish he'd have a second gear or a third gear. Sure. But that's just not who he is. And I think someone brought it up on Gopher Illustrated, and I think it's maybe a much more accurate comparison of sorts. But he's almost Donnell Kirkwood-like, where he is a north-south runner, not the biggest of guys. I think Donnell was a little bit more wide than what Mohamed Ibrahim is. But Mo Ibrahim has been very, very good as a pass blocker and as a run blocker. You look at the things that on the Seth Green touchdown in the red zone there. Minnesota kind of goes read option. Mo Ibrahim just goes out, kicks out the edge defender there. Seth Green runs inside of him, touchdown. I mean, Mo is just a guy that plays his tail off, is a north-south runner, doesn't have anything more than probably 4.8 speed, but the dude is just a grinder. And you saw him grind on Saturday. He was able to get some big holes into the second level. And then, Luke, I know that you appreciated this one where he had the grittiest of gritty at Big Ten runs, because when you think of Big Ten football, you think of pushing the pile. Well, the 5'8", 210-pound running back got lost in the 6'6 trees of monsters, and he grinds that pile forward for an extra 8 yards. Now, how does he do that? Number one, he kept his legs churning. He's got a low center of gravity, and he kept pushing. But you also look at that play. Look at the offensive linemen around him. They were all still engaged in their blocks. And you can't have a defender take him down if no one can get a hand on him because they're still engaged with the block. So he gets into the middle of mass, keeps his legs churning. The offensive line feels him behind them. And then Daniel Faalele finally gets the final push there to make sure that he falls forward. But, again, counters have been something, and just creativity from an offensive coordinator is something we've been clamoring for essentially this entire podcast before Kirk Shiraka in this 2018 season here, where he didn't have the weapons to do it last year. Now, I am just giddy thinking about what this offense could potentially look like next year when you get Rodney and Shannon back. If Tyler Johnson is a senior, Rashad Bateman a year older, Chris Ottman-Bell a year older, you potentially put an influx of these 2019 recruits as well. And we're talking about as dynamic of a Gopher offense as we've seen from a play calling standpoint and from a personnel standpoint, which I'll continue to go on KFan, this podcast, Gopher Illustrated, and say I am as optimistic about this Gopher offense as I've been in a very, very long time.
All right, so let's talk a tiny bit about Tanner Morgan here. I don't think this was his best game. He managed it well. He was 10 of 18, 139 yards, one touchdown, one interception, which really wasn't his fault by any stretch of the imagination. Maybe he could have thrown it onto the body a little bit better, but that's a ball that I think the receiver needs to come down with. But you know, he adds that extra dimension in terms of a runner, and that's a bonus. But curious to get your take, Derek. You know, he's got a sample size of, I think, 3 games now. You know, long term, would you rather see Anikstad or would you rather see Morgan?
Oh boy, I think that if I had to guess, I think the coaches feel that maybe Anikstad has a little bit higher ceiling. I think it's very close. The coaches have said that the whole way. It's a good position to be in that you now have 2 players that are capable of starting and playing at a Big Ten level. I think that Tanner Morgan he does provide a little bit more with his legs. It was nice to see on Saturday he's able to, you know, on a couple of the coverage sacks, well, he kept his eyes downfield. He ended up taking the sack, and that's okay. He didn't get antsy. He does not throwing the ball wildly when he feels pressure. So he was able to react to that and, you know, he scrambled out on one and kept the play going and nothing opened up. And so sometimes those plays that don't end up, you know, making the highlight film or the box score were some of his better decisions. But I would say probably Anikstad as a pocket passer with this receiving core, maybe long-term is a little bit, has a little bit higher ceiling, especially if the Gophers can develop the offensive blocking that they want to, you're probably not going to need to rely on the read option as much, which is something that Tanner Morgan does better. And so, you know, if you can play more of a pocket passing game, let the receivers get downfield, let your offensive line block just for the running back without read option, that might be the better option long term. But again, they've developed experience with 2 guys now. It's a good situation to have and a good competition, and hopefully those guys keep pushing each other.
So I think Ryan, I'm going to interrupt you there real quick. I want you to answer the same question, but I want you to kind of roll it in with who they've got coming in at quarterback from a recruiting perspective, because you have much more knowledge on that than either Derek or I do. What do you think going forward from a quarterback perspective we might see?
I think you got to keep rolling with Tanner Morgan until he literally loses a game. Or we've had Anikstad games where his arm gets him in trouble because he's got the Brett Favre mentality where he thinks he can make any throw on the field. You know, and as big of an Anikstad guy as I am, I think going into 2019, I think for the foreseeable future, I mean, this offense is putting up points with Tanner Morgan as a signal caller. Now, is it always pretty? No, it's not always pretty. But the reality is, Minnesota's offense has now scored 28 or more points in 5 of their last 6 Big Ten games. And at home in their three Big Ten games this year against Iowa, Indiana, and Purdue, they're averaging over 36 points a game. Now, I knew that the home-road splits were going to be drastic. We talked about that in the preseason on Gopher Illustrated on this podcast, where I thought this offense, because of all the underclassmen that they were going to be playing, was going to be much better at home. And it's proven that here so far. So you're hoping you see that again here this weekend. But long-term, it's going to be an interesting spring ball because with Jacob Clark and Cole Kramer coming in now, I'm as big of a Cole Kramer fan as anyone, but I think it's going to be a little bit of time before Cole Kramer is challenging for that quarterback position, because coming from a 19-20 offense in Eden Prairie to a Big Ten spread offense at Minnesota, I think it's going to take some time for Cole Kramer to adjust there. But I know that the expectations are sky high for Jacob Clark, someone that is arguably going to be, or I know he is going to be in the 4-star quarterback discussion. He's been tearing it up for Rockwell, Texas down there all season long. And he's just another guy that you're going to add to this fold come the spring, where I don't think that Zach Anikstad and or Tanner Morgan have shown this year that they're the guy that you're going to build around in 2019. And that's where it's going to be. How quickly can Jacob Clark come in here, learn the offense, and come fall camp 2019? Who is going to win this quarterback battle? Because I think it's going to be between those three. Now, you always have to figure that the incumbents and Anikstad and Morgan are going to have a lead on him going into spring ball, absolutely, and then going into fall camp as well. But I'm definitely not counting out Jacob Clark, because I know – you know, Jacob Clark was up here again this weekend, and the message has been reiterated to him. I've also heard it from my sources close to the Gopher coaching staff that Jacob Clark's going to have a legit shot to come in here and compete for this quarterback job. So Tanner Morgan and Zach Anikstad got to be ready come the spring. But this Gopher offense continues to put up points no matter who the quarterback has been here over the last six Big Ten games. And you're hoping that that 36-point total at home, of which they've shown in their three Big Ten home games, continues here again this weekend.
All right, let's chat a little bit about special teams. It's something we omitted in our frustration of the Illinois game, but we should touch on this. Kudos to Emmett Carpenter again, another clean sheet for him, 2-for-2 on field goals, long of 27 and 5-for-5 on extra points, 11 points total on the day. Kudos to him. I don't know. I thought Herbers was okay this game. He wasn't phenomenal.
Jacob Herbers is such a conundrum.
Yeah.
And, like, in one breath, Luke, I mean, you're the elite punting mind. he has the least punt return yards against him in the Big Ten. Nobody returns his punts. But in that same breath, he's not punting it very far. Like, you look at what he's done the last 3 weeks, he's got 12 punts, and there's been one inside the 20 and one over 50 yards. And he's averaged under 40 yards a punt, yet he was just named to whatever the punting.
The Roy guy.
The Ray guy. So he was named a Ray guy semifinalist. So I guess I'd love to see, like, it's great that Minnesota's punt coverage team is being able to get down on these punts, and maybe it's, you know, the ball is in the air. I don't know what the hang time is on these punts, but just the last, you know, four games, five of the last six games. I mean, in five of the last six games, you take out that Nebraska game. So for Iowa, Ohio State, Indiana, Illinois, and Purdue, he's got two punts inside the 20 and one over 50 yards. And in that time span, he's got, let me see if my University of Minnesota have, he's got 18 punts. Like, in four of those five, he doesn't have an over 40 average. So I don't know. Like, is it great that Minnesota is not getting any punt returns against them? Sure, but he's only kicking it on average 39 yards, which isn't exactly flipping the field, but I don't know that people really want to hear that.
Yeah, well, in the same respect, too, you know, we haven't really seen anything out of punt returns ever since Antoine Winfield Jr. went down. Derek, is this...
Well, that's a choice for the Minnesota punt return unit. Because
exactly.
I mean,
I got to imagine that this is a choice based on just athletes, right? Like, they just don't feel they have someone that's... They'd rather take the conservative approach, catch the ball, and then go forward instead of taking the risk of, you know, trying to catch and move forward.
Yeah, that's definitely a coaching decision that was made. I will add that on the game Saturday, it might not have showed up on TV, but they did go for at least three blocks on punts and got very close. Actually, a couple times got close to a roughing the kicker penalty as well, because those guys were diving in. So they were aggressive. Their game plan was aggressive in terms of a punt block. They went for at least three of them, didn't come up with one, but looked pretty good. They had a couple guys leak through. And the only other thing I would add on special teams, in addition to, you know, Emmett Carpenter having a couple, what were really at the time key kicks. I mean, at the end of the game, it's a blowout and you tend to overlook, you know, well, what's a couple field goals. But at that point in the game, it's still a one or two score game. So, but in addition to that, you know, Demetrius Douglas had a rough day on offense, but he didn't let that affect him in the return game. And, you know, with the weather being what it was, and I know, Ryan, you said it didn't have a huge impact, but it could have. And he didn't let that, you know, impact things in the kicking game. So, you know, I'm not a special teams guy, and coming from a guy that played, you know, in the regular part of the game, I tend to get driven nuts when your special teams hurts you. So for me, I look at it and say, you know, we're not muffing punts. We're not having huge breakdowns. And for me, that's a win. You know, maybe we're not creating a lot of explosive plays, but we're not letting it hurt us a ton either.
Yeah, absolutely. Any last parting thoughts that you want to leave, Ryan?
Yeah, I kind of want to look at this. I want to get Derek's impression here for the final two games of the year, because we talked extensively about it in the pre-production meeting, but I almost think that this game this weekend for Northwestern is an absolute trap game, because this Northwestern team just clinched the Big Ten West. Now they have Minnesota and Illinois in their final two games, and Minnesota's been playing much, much better at home than they have on the road. And you look at this Northwestern team, what do they exactly have to play for? Now, your argument to me is, you know, a better bowl game. but this could be a classic letdown spot. Now, am I well aware that Northwestern has won 13 of their last 14 Big Ten games with that only loss to a Michigan team? Yeah, but this is also a Northwestern team that earlier this year lost to Akron at home, that barely beat Rutgers. They had to come from behind in the fourth quarter. I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibilities that Minnesota absolutely has a shot in this game, including Vegas thinks that Minnesota has a shot in this game. Northwestern is a three-point favorite. Big Ten West champion is a three-point road favorite to a Minnesota team that has been very hot and cold. And then you look at this Wisconsin team. This is a Wisconsin team that's as average as I've ever seen it. I mean, could this finally be the fall of Wisconsin? No, Alex Hornibrook. Badger fans for years have been clamoring for no Alex Hornibrook. Jack Cohen on the day was terrible. I'm just not sold that, you know, this Wisconsin team is anything to really be worried about like we have in the past. I mentioned they've lost three of their last five games. They're a five and a half point road favorite, or excuse me, road underdog to a Purdue team this weekend. So you look at these final two games, Derek, I think the biggest thing that is going to determine these is how this Gopher defense shows up. But these Northwestern and Wisconsin offenses aren't really anything that Minnesota's faced since Iowa. So what is your kind of look ahead to these final two games of the season, considering what you saw on Saturday, and then with Northwestern specifically, how well Minnesota's been playing on offense at home?
Well, I think that as we touched on earlier, the Northwestern game in particular is going to be interesting to see how Northwestern's offense now game plans against what they saw from the Gophers against Purdue. So this is going to be the first challenge to see someone with a team with a week to game plan against this, some of these new looks on the Gophers defense. How do the Gophers react to that? You know, just knowing Northwestern and having watched them for all throughout the Pat Fitzgerald era, their one hallmark is that they can win any game and they can lose any game. They're that type of team. It doesn't matter who they play. They're kind of a quirky team that way. So if I'm coaching the Gophers, I'm telling them you have to bring your best every week, but especially in a team like Northwestern, if you get up three scores, you can't let off the gas pedal. You know, if you get down three scores, you can't lose your composure. They're that type of team. You know, schematically, I haven't had a great look at them. Doesn't sound like as much as you have, Ryan. You've seen had a little bit better look. I know that they have a freshman running back. He's pretty good, but he's a freshman. He doesn't look terribly explosive on offense. So it'd be interesting to see just how they game plan against Minnesota and how we react. And then in the Wisconsin game, what I would say, I have had a chance to see them a few times. I think this year Wisconsin doesn't have their top flight offensive line they normally have. I think throughout the hallmark of their Barry Alvarez era, if you can call it that, is everybody loves to talk about how good the running backs do. They talk about the quarterback, but the real reason they've had success is they've been able to put together what I would consider top five in the country offensive lines year after year after year. I've had a chance to see him play this year a few times, and they're good. Their offensive line is very solid, but I don't think they're at the level that some of their better teams have been at. So I think schematically, Minnesota's defense matches up well with Wisconsin's offense. It's a little more straightforward. You're going to play in a phone booth. You've got to bring population to the ball to stop them. I think I would take a special look at the Gophers' defensive line. That game may be won or lost depending on how the Gophers defensive line plays in that game. In the past, where Wisconsin's been able to get rolling, it's where Minnesota's defensive line gets wore down, whether that be by injuries or by just sheer attrition through the game. So, but I think schematically they're going to match up well against the Badgers.
It's fascinating because both offenses don't really scare me outside of Jonathan Taylor. You look at Northwestern's team coming in here this weekend. They lost their best running back in Jeremy Larkin to a medical condition. And Isaiah Bowser, I think, is a Mo Ibrahim type of back where he's not exactly a game changer. He's a grinder. You look at the skill position players on the outside for Clayton Thorson, and this offense, nothing exactly to write home about. So I don't think there's going to be a ton of points scored here this weekend from Northwestern. They're going to have to go down the field 8, 9, 10 play drives, and it's going to be on this Gopher team to see if they can be able to hold up. And then Minnesota's offense is going to have a great test going against Northwestern defense that has been holding together this Northwestern Big Ten West championship. You want to know why a 6-4 Northwestern team is the Big Ten West champion? Go ahead and look at their defense. They've been playing very well. I also think when you look at Wisconsin right now, you have Jonathan Taylor, but imagine where that team would be without him right now. He's a one-man wrecking crew. He was a Heisman conversation topic going into the season. I think he's still playing well, but they just don't have the skill athletes on the outside or at tight end or necessarily any talent at quarterback to really propel that offense here going forward. And then when you look at their defense, they've hit a lot of injuries in that secondary from Wisconsin. And you have to wonder where their head's going to be at. If they do lose to Purdue this weekend, they'll have lost 3 of their last 4, 4 of their last 6. Whereas Minnesota's got to be looking at that game thinking, we're going to have as good of a shot as we're going to have. So, you know, my tune has changed absolutely in 1 week from the low of lows to another, you know, peak performance from the Gopher offense, the Gopher defense rebounds. And with Northwestern at home, I think this is an absolute winnable game, and I think you're going to have a shot against Wisconsin. So, Luke, I know I laughed you off the podcast when you were asking about bowl stuff. I think it was on the preview or on the post one. You know, it's just the ebbs and flows of 18 to 22-year-old kids. You never know what you're going to get on any given Saturday because you never know what's going on in their lives. You never know what's going to have them flip the switch. But Minnesota's performance in this 41-10 victory certainly is going to make it much more interesting for these final two games. And it's going to be senior day, 28 degrees on Saturday is the projected high. And we're going to have to see if this Gopher crowd shows up a little bit better than they did against this Purdue team.
All right, so I think that'll probably do it for this episode. We want to thank everyone for listening, as always. If you enjoy the podcast, please do rate and leave comments on, you know, iTunes, whatever podcasting aggregator that you use. It does really help, and we appreciate it greatly. Also, if you are interested in Ryan's stuff, check it out on gopherillustrated.com. Additionally, want to thank the Goal Line Club for sponsoring the podcast again, and we thank you for listening, and go Gophers.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.